So here we go. We've been on hiatus for a while, and we apologize for that. But we are back. We are back with Seat of Your Pants, starring Mistress Kai and myself, Jay from Why Not. Thank you for your patience, everyone. This is a show about audio voyeurism, and we have our wonderful guest today. Casey Kisses, ladies and gentlemen, is joining us. And, you know, in typical fashion, this is more or less like an ambush. So anything goes.
Perfect.
I'm very excited about this episode. I'm sorry we couldn't get it together like 2 months ago. I think we were going to record before the movie came out.
Yes.
I think something happened with my mom. So I've been very excited since then for this episode.
Well, Casey, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today? How's everything going?
It's a pleasure to be here. Everything's going pretty good. Swimmingly, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. How about yourself?
You know, today's one of those crazy days where I need to find a vendor for a certain service all of a sudden that I was not expecting. And I had an issue with an article and my back got thrown out. So a lot of shitty things going on.
Oh my goodness.
I know, but I'm in good spirits. I'm a freaking train wreck, but you know what? I'm good. I'm happy. Things are good. And I want to talk about Casey, a true story. So, you know, the movie, it's an adult time movie and it basically, it chronicles your life. It came out in September, if I'm correct, right?
September 7th, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, let's talk about it. I mean, like, how did this project even, like, get started? Because it's certainly not a small undertaking.
No, it actually got started on it was a content trade that Joanna Angel, my girlfriend Kylie Laveau, and I, we were filming together. And Joanna was asked to do a really big feature for this year. And in passing, she was kind of talking to me about maybe riding my motorcycle in it. And she was asking me about what type of experience I have riding motorcycles. And I told her, I ride on the track. I used to be in a bike club. And what's funny is I actually got kicked out of it because, I'm LGBT. And she was like, what? She was like, that happened? And I was like, yeah, it was crazy because same day that my dad got released from prison. And she's like, oh my gosh. She's like, starts typing on her phone as we're talking. And she's like, uh-huh. And as she's typing, she's actually reaching out to Brie Mills to us to maybe pitch the script. So she pitched the script to Brie and then turned to me and asked if it would be okay to make a movie about it. And of course, like this is, I mean, it's something that is super personal to me, but I mean, to be able to share my story and inspire others, especially with Joanna and Brie Mills backing it. I feel like there's nothing that could go wrong in their hands.
Yeah. That's huge to have their kind of support, you know, with the longevity and just the contributions that both Joanna and Brie have made to the industry in their own way. You know, it was pretty much destined for success from the start, you know, I mean, it sounds like.
It's such an important story. Like, I think it's something we need to look at because of the way things are changing right now, but also the traditions of bike clubs, how they're so very hetero. I don't want to use the word toxic.
I would say discrimination is like a big thing that was like in progression within the bike community is something that's been pushed a lot over the last few years.
Well, you know, two things that are very popular in, you know, like TV culture that you can say. I mean, well, first of all, you know, I mean, you have to obviously mention Sons of Anarchy when you talk about bike clubs, because that was one of the biggest, you know, biker TV shows in modern times. And I mean, you know, the character of Tig and how, you know, he was very much into trans people. And there's that the person who plays a trans woman in the show on many episodes. And that whole storyline, you know, was, I thought it was handled like as well as they probably could have. You know, but I mean, I'm speaking as a cis male. So, you know, I don't really have much dog in that fight, but I mean, what is your opinion, I guess, on all that and the way they dealt with that?
Well, I mean, it's a different time. And, even though it was, you know, only so long ago, I joined that club in 2010, mm-hmm. we would actually get together in the clubhouse and watch Sons of Anarchy as the episodes released and watching the one with Tiggs. I was like, you know, I kind of felt like the support of a family from the members of the bike club. I mean, I felt like, I mean, it's still as hard as it was to come out with it. I didn't think that I was going to get as bad of a reaction, especially with the amount of things that I did for the club. So to be kicked out and to be kind of treated like that was definitely, TV shows and movies are movies, you know? So watching Sons of Anarchy, we didn't really do everything that Sons of Anarchy did. Right. And I didn't expect them to act the same way, especially when it came out to this. But they were there for me. I still remain in contact with a lot of people. I mean, I made like really like lifetime friendships and bonds and experiences with people that, I mean, no matter how much they kick me out or take the patches off, you can't, you know, erase me from your memory.
Sure. Yeah.
And you were an officer in that club. Isn't that right? You were an officer?
Yeah, I was. At first I was a road guard and became road captain actually before I was kicked out.
Wow.
I was curious. I wanted to ask you about Sons of Anarchy because I was trying to gauge about the time periods. And because I think Jay and I are probably old enough to be like your parents. So my experiences with, I would say more along the lines of what they were calling them gangs back then. We had a lot of outlaw bikers in my area. And my dad, you know, was pretty friendly with them. And things were extremely different in the late 70s and early 80s. So today I was thinking about it and I was like, I wonder if they watched Sons of Anarchy and I wonder if they watched those episodes. So did you, just go into what Jay was talking about, did you see them have any type of response to those episodes with that character of Tig and that storyline?
No, not so much. I mean, we did, what was interesting is we had a trans man in the club. And we had different divisions, I guess you would say. There was a section for men, and there was a section for lady. We had lady riders, and when it came to, and it was just like before, you know, trans was getting popular, gaining any type of attention. It was that we had a trans man just joining the club, and we all had to do a vote on whether he can be a rider and like a male rider, and. He was actually he became a rider in the club, which is interesting. So, I mean, as far as like transphobia, I feel like it was, or things were surrounding that nature of behavior. I feel like people were, starting to be more acceptive, but they weren't ready for Casey Kisses, I guess, yet to be an officer in a bike club, I guess.
I love to hear that because my experiences decades prior, it was kind of awful if you were expressing any type, I mean, any, the smallest thread of femininity. It was pretty awful. So seeing that storyline and then seeing your story coming out, like it fills my heart so much how much we've progressed in that very heavily masculine, hetero masculine community. Like I can't even express how much it fills my heart to hear about your story. I'm so excited you're here today.
Definitely, same here. And you know, I feel like it's just progression in general because back and especially 10, 20 years ago, there wasn't cis females riding in clubs. There wasn't, right now I actually know a gay president of a motorcycle club. There was an openly gay president as well at that. So it's like, having, you know, a melting pot of a diverse amount of people coming from where it used to be. MC used to not stand for motorcycle club, stand for men's club. So, and in some clubs it still remains that way. But, I feel like, there's different levels of clubs, you know, and to be in like a family club or like a riding club, I think the experiences that I had to talk highly on the motorcycle clubs is there was a lot of things that we did that was positive. We would strap like toys on the back of our bikes and bring them to donate to less fortunate children. We were raising money to for veterans that, you know, had or families of veterans that have lost family in the war. And there was just so much positivity that we did for one another. It wasn't really like Sons of Anarchy where we're like, murdering people and dumping their bodies in a hole. I never did any of that.
Well, then, you know, because we kind of have a no editing rule. If you were to say anything like that, we'd have to cut it out anyway, just to protect you. So
I think that's a big misconception about any type of motorcycle club, is that they think even sometimes the weekend gents, or the weekend riders, I should say, not gents, the weekend riders, you know, there's something like sort of they're up to no good, or there's something nefarious. My experience has always been incredibly positive, whether it's going back to more outlaw-y type or current day motorcycle clubs. My experience has always been positive. They've always been generous. They've always been big contributors to the community. There's a lot of stigma around it that I know is false. You know is false. Especially concerning veterans and children, those two things that you mentioned. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I would like to, one of the things that we're, and I think we're already doing it, is to expose that we all live marginalized in our community, in our adult industry community, and they're marginalized as well and stigmatized. And I'm so glad that we're having this conversation, because they are incredibly generous, especially to their local communities. Incredibly generous.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, this is good, dispelling myths, you know, because, you know, when you talk about marginalized, you know, yeah, I mean, there's different levels of marginalization for all of us. I mean, I was marginalized when I was growing up, you know, I was the only Jewish kid in an entire school of 1,300 people. So, you know, I had that to deal with. And just, you know, I think back to like a lot of just the anti-Semitic bullshit and everything. So, you know, to the naked eye, I don't appear to be a marginalized person in any way, shape or form. But, you know, I certainly dealt with my share of it as a child. And, you know, I think, you know, while we're dispelling myths and rumors and everything, you know, I hope that people listen to this episode that are not in the industry. You know, I'm sure a lot of Casey's fans will be tuning in, and they'll learn something new out of it. And they'll like realize, ah, you know what? They're people just like the rest of us. Except these guys are more fun.
Way more fun.
You know, and I mean, speaking of, you know, another thing that needs to happen as far as progression is concerned is, you know, anytime in a movie or a TV show when someone goes out on a date and they end up with someone and they don't have the correct parts in their mind as they're, you know, about to get amorous with someone in a scene, what's the first thing that always fucking happens? They get extremely triggered and angry, and then they, you know, take, you know, abuse the shit out of that person. And it's just like, I don't know if that stuff still goes on in movies and TV. Like, I mean, it was a given in any TV show back in the day. It's just like, if someone ended up with someone trans, this is what you did. And it would just be like, no, who does that? I mean, give me a fucking break. I mean, yes, I'm sure people do that, but does it need to be shown every time? I mean, you know, there just needs to be more acceptance.
That's why movies like Casey's are so important.
Yeah.
There was even in Ted 2, there was a lot, there was like a and Mark Wahlberg is like one of my favorite actors. So, and I loved the first Ted. So I was like, oh, this is an amazing movie. And in that they had a really really offensive line. And I remember this, it's like right when I was starting to join the industry, it was, you know, about trans women. And I was just like, wow, with all this progression, and you have people like Caitlyn Jenner just like, you know, and trans being on a face and being on the front line more so than before, it's like it was kind of disheartening to see somebody that you look up to, especially when you're joining like an industry revolving around acting. And so, you know, it's the people that we look up to, and it kind of shatters a lot of hopes and, you know, a lot of inspiration that we draw from these people.
Yeah, I was wondering, as I was listening to you, have people reached out to you since the movie debuted in September?
You know what? I've actually, because I get so many Instagram messages, I have to like, really, I just kind of scan through them. And if I see something really interesting, I click on it. And one of the comments that I had was, I reached somebody in Australia that was just trying to transition, and they were a motorcycle rider as well. And the story really inspired him. I was actually reached out to by their family member. So it was really interesting. I think it's not just reaching people that are, you know, fans of my work in the adult industry. I think it's reaching like a dynamic range of people, including beginner trans people that are, you know, seeking inspiration. It's something I did when I was starting to transition as well.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking you're definitely going to be an inspiration for a lot of people out there that are going to see this film. I was listening to you all on Holly Randall's podcast, who I love Holly Randall. And I think Joanna had said there was going to be an R-rated version. And I thought, that's phenomenal. Like, that's such a good idea, because that's going to go out the mainstream. And I think you're probably going to be a huge inspiration, especially maybe for like a lot of teenagers that are coming up and, you know, still having the identity issues. That's why I was wondering if, you know, folks have been reaching out to you.
Well, the accessibility of the R-rated film has been limited because YouTube took it down for graphic content.
No.
Coincidentally, it was on my birthday as well. So it was a nice thing to wake up to. I was checking it at, like, every couple hours. I was like, the views are going up. I'm getting so much feedback in my Chatterbait comments, because that's where I have the most live viewers. I'm getting so much good feedback about this. So I was like constantly looking at it, and to wake up on my birthday and see it was taken down was kind of, it was a tough blow to take, but it is up on caseyfilm.com. Thanks to Adult Time, and you guys can watch it. You know, anybody listening can watch it there.
Casey Film, CASEY film.com.
Exactly. Thank you.
Absolutely.
We'll put that out on our promo stuff too. That way people can, you know, link right to it.
You know what else we need to put on a promo, which it's just like slipped my mind. We have a new sponsor for the show. The podcast.
That's right. I forgot about that. So,
yeah, this is.
We're all grown up.
I know, right? People care. They love us. They really do. So I wanted to actually just give a shout out here to Only Dolls. If you've been to the last few Exoticas, you've seen these amazing life size, real feel. Everything about them is absolutely amazing dolls. And they're, you know, they have an affiliate program with it. It's onlydolls.com. They are the number one sex doll marketplace. And they actually have some kind of special coming up. They got a Black Friday pre-sale where you can save 20% off of all their sex dolls. And I think their dolls start at only $800 or something. So it's very affordable. You know, go check them out. Onlydolls.com. All right. So now back to our podcast.
I can't believe we have like a sponsor. We're like all grown up now.
Episodes where we don't have to mention anybody. So now it's like, I gotta at least be cognizant of that. So, let me ask you this. Are you still riding, motorcycles? Is that how you get around primarily?
Not primarily, just because, the more risk that you, put yourself, at under the road is more chance of getting into an accident or something like that. I like to go out riding with my friends. I like to do it, you know, in an appropriate amount of time, especially with the weather in Las Vegas. It's either 100 degrees or it's 40 degrees. And it does get kind of tough to ride in those conditions. But I have a truck, and my girlfriend has a car as well. So we mainly drive around, but I do a lot of track riding. I feel like it helps brush up on my skills, and I can go as fast as I want without having to get pulled over.
Nice.
Are you part of a club now? I think when I was listening to the Holly Randall episode, you were maybe getting into another club.
Well, it's really interesting because during the filming of the movie, I was asked to join another club. I wasn't like actively seeking another club, and these members asked me to join their club, and I was prospecting for a club during the time of the movie, and I was kicked out of that club like maybe a week or two after filming, which is kind of lame. But since then, I've just been kind of sticking to track riding.
I was, I had an incident where I sort of outed myself as a lifestyle kinkster and a professional dominatrix on social media. And then I was listening to you talking about how your story sort of all came about, how you had sort of kind of outed yourself on Facebook because of a Facebook friend. And I know that person was inspirational to you and maybe was partially the genesis of your transition. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that sequence of events that had occurred.
Oh, well, yeah. So the industry is kind of full circle. So when I was younger, I had, unfortunately, I had a brother and sister, a stepbrother and sister that were taken away by Child Protective Services. So we were, and the mother kind of, they were visiting us once in a while, and they, like, out of nowhere, they just kind of disappeared and just moved completely away, and we had no contact with them whatsoever. So around the time that my little sister turned 17, she got a Facebook, and my stepsister and my biological sister had a Facebook as well. And she was like, "Hey, our sister's on this app. You should join it to talk to her." So that I didn't know anything about Facebook. I only had it to reach out to my sister, who I was not in contact with for years. And doing that, I was like, you know, sitting outside of the jail, and I was with my trans girlfriend at the time. And that's when she asked to make it official on Facebook, I guess. And I didn't think anything of it. I was just like, okay, sure. And my girlfriend at the time, her pronouns, I guess her gender identity was more trans than it was. She was going to be like a biological woman. She was really happy being trans, and she loved where she came from. She was really proud to be trans. So she had her Facebook since she was younger. See, for me, I started a new profile over. I was like, I don't want to look at my pictures. I have a lot of dysphoria. This is like something that I don't want to constantly remind myself with. She actually had all of her pictures on there, and where it says like, oh, this person changed their profile picture, it said it was a gendered pronoun. So it was like he and him, and everybody noticed that right away. And within 5 minutes, I was being called up, and they were all screaming at me, and they were saying, well, you just outed yourself, and we're going to come, and where are you at? We're going to come take your patches, which is like, it's like 11. It was somewhere between like 11 and 2 o'clock in the morning. I know I was out there till about 3, but, and the time was just kind of, like dragging on, because, you know, as you're sitting in the cold waiting on somebody to be released from somewhere, you don't know what time they're going to be released. I'll sit in there forever. But what's really interesting about the thing about my sister is that I actually got to meet her for the first time in 20 years because of the industry. So, and speaking to her on Facebook, I found out that she lived in a city that I was actually being casted to dance in, and I was sick of dancing, and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore, and I was like, I'm never doing this again. And then I get a call to go to the city where she is, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go meet my sister. And I met her, and it was so emotional. I kept thinking of like how nervous I would be when I first saw her, that I didn't even think about how I was going to react when I had to say goodbye, and I was just like a complete wreck. I was like, I'm going to start crying right now, even thinking about it, because like when we were pulling up to the hotel for her to drop me off, I was just like, I was so scared to meet you. I couldn't even imagine what saying goodbye would be like. I love the industry. It's done so much for me and my life and my family in general.
Me too. I love this industry, all aspects of it, especially the people in it. Wouldn't you agree, Jay? There's just this level of understanding and support, and I hate to use the word fellowship because people always default and think, you know, solely about church, but there is a fellowship in our community, I think, unlike others.
I can completely be myself around everybody. You know, I don't have to censor myself, or, I mean, I'll be obviously, you know, sensitive to other people, and, you know, sometimes with my humor tends to be a little much, but, you know, when it comes to just being myself and accepting others, this is totally where I belong. I mean, you know, when I grew up, I was always the odd kid out, and, you know, I always clung to people that I found to be even more weird than me, so to speak, for lack of a better use of a word. And so I've always been attracted to people that just don't give a fuck or do their own thing or, you know, embrace their differences. And, you know, I mean, I've been attracted to that since as early as I can remember, 4 or 5 years old. It's like, who's the one that, you know, the other kids are ignoring? It's like, oh, that one. Well, I want to find out why, you know? And, you know, then that person, yeah, then they would be my friend. It's just like, it's been that way for the last, you know, many years. And I mean, it's also why I'm going to be in this business in one capacity or another, you know, for the rest of my life. I've got nowhere else I want to be.
Did you find that too, Casey, that the industry sort of welcomed you? Did you have that positive type journey?
Oh, absolutely. The industry, not only welcoming, but it was like, it's been confidence building. It's kind of hard to experience as much dysphoria as I was experiencing prior to being in the industry after I'm getting, casted for so many roles and being, and all these wonderful comments and being asked to come on your podcast. This is like, it's like fantastic. It's like, how can I not feel good about myself? And if you look at a picture of me, pre-industry and where I am now, it's just like, it's just a huge difference. And it the industry hasn't destroyed me, but it really built me up, and it's made me successful. It's brought me success, and it's brought me friends, and it's brought me over to the other side of the country and allowed me to do so many things and travel so many places and, just be in contact with so many of my people that I looked up to. I mean, how many times have I been on set and I'm like, holy shit, I'm working with this person, especially somebody like, there's people that I've worked with on sets that I've been on that it was like, dude, I used to masturbate to the stuff. Like, now I was like, now I get to work with you. I'm like, this is a dream come true. Like, I loved it. And that's why I'm a firm believer in having good chemistry with your scene partner and not taking every scene that you're getting thrown out. Do things that you want to do. It could be hazardous for your mental health. I'm not saying that it's going to be a success story for everybody. It could be dangerous. And especially if you are doing things like that, if you're constantly, like, let's say you don't want to do anal and you're constantly doing anal, because they're offering you that. I feel like you can make your own path, follow your own path, and, really have fun with it, because this is something that we looked up to you. But prior to joining the industry, we always I fantasized about it. I said, this is, these people have an amazing career. They got such an amazing life. They get to go to these beautiful homes and fuck on every surface in the house. Like, I think that's great. And, to be out here and to be experiencing it, I could definitely vouch for that as well.
You mentioned travel. I'd be curious to know, do you have any big plans? Now that things seem to be somewhat getting back to normal and, it's easier to travel across countries, do you have certain places that you like to go, whether it's for business or for pleasure, or anything that you have planned coming up in 2022?
I'm an island girl. I definitely, I wish I could travel outside of the United States. I was adopted though. So I'm having trouble with my birth certificate. I'm having trouble tracking it down and like getting original birth certificates. So I got to have a passport and, do all these wonderful things and see all these wonderful places. There's so many places I want to go. And, most of them are islands and surrounded by water. It's like my favorite thing. So Hawaii is definitely the most exotic place that I like to try. They're in Miami. I'm really big on going back, to where I'm from. And I love fishing. I love being by the ocean, I feel like Hawaii has that, like, but on steroids. They have like these beautiful mountains and waterfalls and stuff that you don't have in Miami. So if I get a chance to, I'm definitely going to be going to Hawaii, hopefully as frequently as I was doing pre-pandemic, because I was there like 3 or 4 times a year.
How about like Bahamas or Jamaica? Have you been to either of those or have interest?
Oh, I don't have a passport, but I would love to.
So yeah, I guess I'm just so used to getting around and doing whatever I want that I don't have to think about stuff like that, which sucks.
See, yeah, you fly off to Prague and everywhere. You're all over the place.
Bali and Fiji and Greece are three of the top ones on my list. I really would love to experience those and just see all the different types. Japan would be amazing too. Just the amount of marine life that they have there, as well as like just like the beautiful scenery. And their culture is just something I really like to soak in and appreciate.
Yeah.
So did you say you're from Florida?
Yeah. Crazy Florida girl.
Wow.
So with this, with your biker connection, then when you were talking earlier, you were talking about how, there are now, women, led or female riding clubs where they weren't before. And Florida was the first place that I saw that. At Bike Week in Daytona. So I was wondering, have you ever gone to Bike Week?
Oh, I got some crazy stories from Bike Week.
too.
Yeah, we had so much fun. Bike week, not just bike week, but Biketoberfest.
Biketoberfest,
so,
yep.
Yes. We were, that was the only place I'd go and ride without a helmet, because you're not going anywhere, especially on a motorcycle. You could be on a sports bike. You could be on the fastest sports bike. You're in Daytona during Biketoberfest or bike week. You're not going anywhere fast. You're stuck on that bridge just for like 2 hours in the sun. Yeah, fuck the helmet. Fuck the helmet.
I've had the best time at bike week and Biketoberfest, like the best times of my life. And then, you know, maybe done some really bad things there too.
Well, it's kind of a license to behave badly. I mean, let's face it, they'll do lots of good things, but come on, in a situation like that, and when you got lots of numbers and substances are being used, shit is going to happen.
Yeah, I've had some crazy drunken nights in Daytona.
Can you tell us one? Can you share one for the show, just for fun?
One of them, it was just, this one was absolutely crazy. We had this thing, we kind of had like little cliques within our chapter, and we would constantly prank each other, like constantly. And I'm talking about pranking like in the most hardcore fashion. So I was just laying down for sleep, and we had the window open because, you know, we're on the beach. We got the nice beach breeze there, and we're literally like on Daytona Beach. So my girlfriend at the time, we're laying there, and I feel something kind of touching my face. And I'm like, what is that? And it's pitch black in the room. I'm like, what is that? And she's like, it's just sand from the, and I woke up in the middle of the night from this. She said, it's just sand from the beach, go back to bed. And within a second of her saying that, I'm hit in the face with like a nice handful of flour. And they they not only hit us all with flour, but they put it in the exhaust of a Harley. And it was my hotel room that I had in my name. So they revved it up, and they started up the engine and revved it up. And we had people sleeping on the floor. And the entire place was covered in and flour, and it startled my friend so bad.
Oh yeah,
he ran outside, and you know what? He had a fucking seizure. He
jumped. Oh my goodness!
So I came outside, and my bike was completely taken apart, and he was freaking the fuck out. He was like, "Who the fuck did this?" His eyes go really big, and he just tenses up and falls. And I stuck my wallet in his mouth, and it's just like they come walking up the hill. I could see him coming from the beach. And they're all laughing, and you know, and I just saved him from his seizure. So I was clapping my hands, and I said, you know what? Congratulations. You almost killed him. And I swear to God, they made him laugh even harder. They're like, so ever since then, whenever I do something stupid, they would just start clapping and say, congratulations.
Well, they have a word for that when you get hit in the face with a big ball full of flour. It's called antiquing.
And oh yeah, yeah. They antique the entire hotel room, and you know I'm banned from that hotel in Daytona. Once we got our thing was up, they're like, yeah, you guys can't come back here.
Oh no.
Which is understandable. It would take forever to clean that up, as opposed to like Jackson Pollocking something that, you know, you can just, you know, wipe that shit away. So
what's a Jackson Pollock?
So Jackson, this is so ridiculous. So Jackson Pollock was a very famous artist back in like the 1940s, I think, maybe the 1950s.
This is how you know that Jay and I are old.
So I'm familiar with Pollock.
But yeah, his paintings were just basically just dumping like, you know, big buckets of paint and just splashing things. So it just looked like just like a big mess. So, you know, if you like, you know, were to plaster a wall with different, you know, amounts of semen, you know, that would be like, you know, Jackson Pollocking.
Oh, I gotcha. So, see, yeah. I always consider the models that I work with after a huge cum shot, I consider them my starry night. So
there you go. Or right, you can just say, I just Jackson Pollocked you.
Yeah. Just use that as my line when I'm coming. Jackson Pollock.
If you do, I will love you forever if you do that once and just put like, you know, a 10 second.
I've been on that for years.
I got you. I'm gonna do it.
That would be awesome. You know, yeah. People over the age of 40 will understand, over the age of 50 even, will be the ones who understand that shit. So
we should talk about the movie a little bit, right? We should talk some about the movie.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the movie. You know, how can people, how can they view it? And, you know, is there any, I guess, fun anecdote that you can share with us about the movie?
Well, you can find a movie on caseyfilm.com, or you can find it on Adult Time, especially if you want to watch those
Adult Time. Yep.
Yeah, those extra hot, steamy scenes that they have. I was just speaking to somebody about that, and they were like, I was talking about the length of the movie, and they're like, I didn't see an hour and 30 minute long movie. They're like, the one I saw was much longer. I was like, all right, you watched the good version then. I definitely encourage y'all to go see the sex scenes as well. But I guess as far as like anecdotes, the whole entire filming process was so much fun. It was kind of like summer camp, to be honest, because it was like one of the longest sets I've been on. We were filming for about 4 or 5 days. I feel like there's not just one experience, but it was just the entire experience as a whole was just so much fun. And being on set with people like Tommy Pistol, Charles Dara, Derek Pierce, Small Hands, did an amazing job acting as well. Joanna appeared in it as well. She did a little cameo. So I thought, you know, just the entire experience, especially being able to do it with my girlfriend and my friends at the time, even though we're not, you know, close anymore, we're not riding together. It was still so much fun to look back at it and say, like, I was right, you know, and after we were done filming, we were going out riding and, you know, we were going out and getting drinks and like, you just having fun, you know, riding within our limits, obviously, but we were just having a good time and, just vibing, I guess. Like it was such a fun experience.
Were any of the scenes, when it was over, were you like, we really nailed that? Like that was really as it actually happened.
Tommy Pistol. Yeah. He was, I mean, I was a fan of Tommy Pistol, and his acting, as well as his porn, before meeting him on set. So, I mean, I met him in passing at an Expos Awards one time, and I was like, I gotta shake this guy's hand. So but besides that, I really didn't know him very well. And when he showed up on set, he was the sweetest person. He took the script and the movie in general and my story just, so personally. And he wanted to make sure that he did it all right. He felt really responsible, especially for being cast as like one of the main characters.
He was your dad in the film, right?
Yeah.
Your dad? Yeah.
He's not my real dad, but
in the film.
Yeah, but he reminded me, oh my God, when he was doing the acting part, and to watch him getting prepared for the acting actually helped me and my acting abilities on set. And just watching him, how he mentally prepared himself and he got in the headspace. And people, you know, I think it's kind of it's kind of backhanded when people are always like, I feel it's kind of uneducated and ignorant when people are like, oh, well, that's porn acting. It's not the best, you know, porn acting. Dude, he's got some of the best acting like I've ever seen.
Agreed. Yep.
And to see him, the way that he prepared for it and he got into character, and when he destroyed the house, we were all like, oh my God, this is fucking amazing. Cause I'm looking at it on a monitor. I'm looking at it with an assist filter over it. And for those of you that don't know, it basically kind of shows the color grading, similar to what it would look like at post-production. I'm watching it on there and I'm watching it. I'm looking up, I'm watching Tommy acting. I'm looking down at the, and it looks like a Netflix series movie. And I was like, Mike Quasar, David Lord are phenomenal. And to watch, you know, just everything just kind of fall into place and be the masterpiece that I think it is it was just really, really surreal. And it was really educating for me as a performer as well.
So speaking of your dad, do you know, now that the movie is out, has, like, I don't know if you're still in contact with him, but has he since discovered that the sheriffs that arrived were actually the bikers wearing the sheriff clothing from the thrift store?
No, I haven't. I'm not in contact with them at this point. At this point in time, I'm always open for healthy relationships, you know, and I'm always I'm a forgive but don't forget type person. I believe in, you know, letting bygones be bygones, but also, you know, understanding what people are capable of and, you know, only not giving them a mile, somebody that's taken advantage of an inch. So I really wish the best for him and I wish that we could have a closer relationship. But in this point in time, he has not reached out to me. I do think it would be interesting if somebody ever did show him that. And he'd probably, like, I'm sure he would probably be like, what the fuck? That was crazy.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean,
it was such a great story when you told that. It was such a great story. Like, the creativity of your friends that showed up. And I was like, well, wouldn't that be great, you know, for him to find out and be like, oh, I got duped.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with the whole forgive and forget thing, I mean, it's like, how easy is it for you to, I guess, accept an apology? And I mean, you know, you got to also understand, like, you know, are we talking somebody that's wronged you a couple of times, or is it something that's happened for many years? How much do you let go, and how much can an apology really, you know, save?
Right. Well, that's why I think of doing everything in, like, you know, healthy increments. I don't think an apology is, you know, is a fix all, or is, you know, it's kind of like a, I don't know. It's not really necessary. It's something that we went through. I mean, moving forward, and I come from a place of change. I used to be a completely different person. You can see that in the movie. And if I think that I can change, I think that other people can too. So I'm always willing to be accepting and open, and especially for family or people that I consider family and close friends. I feel like they do get a little more leverage in those type of situations. But it's definitely something that you got to have, like, mental fitness for.
It also helps if, you know, you can sense that they're coming sincere. You know, it's sincere. They want to make the changes, or they want to be a better person, or their apology, you know, they're working through that's a sincere process for them. Right, Jay?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Well, we are kind of coming to that time where, first of all, we've made it 42 minutes without the feed dropping out. So thank you, Squadcast, for not fucking us.
Three pages of stuff I want to ask Casey.
Three pages?
I know. Well, because I haven't said much. I said a little bit, but, like, I come from this background with certain biker clubs in and out of my life. So I had all these questions. I can't help it. You know me. I'm kind of intense sometimes.
No, but I mean, it's good. I mean, obviously, you know, we could do a two or a three parter with Casey. I guess the only thing is that most people have very short attention spans. And if they see that a podcast is going to be an hour or an hour and a half
they're
long,
like, blah.
You're like, you know, maybe some other time, and then they forget about it. And it's just like, you know, I would love to be able to give 3 minute podcasts, but, you know, come on, folks. But you know what? All right, let's do this. Ask, you know, we go out on a really positive note, and we will do a two-parter with Casey. Why don't you ask her a question that, you know, is just burning the page. You know,
I don't have anything burning. Don't have anything burning, but I do want to know, like, a lot of the bikers I know, and maybe it's just because they were sort of old gents back then, but they seem to have a lot of, I know, we all know, like, clubs are ritualistic. They have the rituals. You have to earn your patch. Everything's ritualistic and based on trust. But they're also, I found them to be very superstitious kind of folks. And I was wondering if Casey had that experience, and then if you had any superstitions from that.
Yeah. Well, one of the main ones that I see a lot of people doing out here, and something that they actually, I was getting kind of in trouble for and getting my license out here, is they wanted at the motorcycle school where you train in Florida, it's mandatory to get your license. You need to be certified from a 3-day motorcycle school. And those classes, they have you put your helmet on the floor, which is a big superstition where we are told not to put our helmets on the floor. I knew that from even before joining in the club. It's just bad luck. You know, it just symbolizes that you will go down. So, and it sits on your neck too. I mean, I had the dirtiest patches. It's something that it was displayed in the movie, but the rest of my clothes were pretty nice. Like the vest, you don't clean, but, I guess that's another one too. We had somebody that they were real suave, right? We're in Miami. So we got somebody that's, like, super suave, and his patches, like, he was riding a lot. So one day he shows up and he's got these shiny, bright patches, and he spent all night cleaning them, and he got yelled at, and he got his ass handed to you because you're not supposed to really be cleaning them. And it kind of shows your, I guess, your level of commitment and how much you, not just to the bike club, but how much you actually ride. There's a lot of people, unfortunately, in the motorcycle club world that don't even have motorcycles, people that had motorcycles and they're still just part of the club. And, you know, these are people I don't ride anymore.
So do you have any any superstitions or anything like that when you're riding?
Just the helmet thing, really.
The helmet thing, yeah.
I have a bell on my motorcycle as well. That's a very popular one. A guardian bell is supposed to ward off road demons, and it's supposed to be given to you, not supposed to be purchased. So if anybody's out there riding around, what's funny too, as Dante. If anybody's riding around without a bell and you think you need one, just wait till somebody gives it to you. But you know, it's funny, Dante, I was riding with him and he was like, "What's this bell for?" And I was like, "Oh," and I explained to him, "It's a guardian bell. Like you can't just buy it and somebody has to give it to you." And he was like, "Oh, I don't have." He's like, "Nobody ever gave me one. So you know what I did? I got him two." And I was like, "He had two bikes." And the next time I saw him, I was like, "Well, here, now you have your guardian bell as well."
I love that story.
Excellent. Cool. Well, I like to end things on a positive note. So let's ask Casey. Well, first of all, thank you very much again for joining us for this episode.
Thank you so much.
Of Your Pants. This is our first episode back in months after a long hiatus due to our events in Hollywood, due to just life things happening, time of year. It was just not happening. So thank you again for coming on our show here, Casey. And tell everyone the best way that they can reach you.
Well, I first want to say thank you both for having me. This has been such a pleasure, and I'm enjoying my time very much. So thank you for having me and for hosting this podcast. And thank you to the sponsor as well, Only Dolls, for making this possible too. For the fans that are listening, you guys can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch at Casey Kisses XOXO. You guys can find me on OnlyFans at iwantcasey.com. And if you search Casey Kisses on Pornhub, please don't forget to subscribe to my profile.
You heard it there, folks. Subscribe to Casey Kisses on all these different platforms. And thanks again. And there go my dogs. So they're letting me know that I guess it's time to wrap up.
Ambassadors.
It's crazy. Okay. Well, you all have a great night and hang tight.
Thank you, Casey, so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure.